Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
WGR Sports Radio 550 presents.
You've got the radio turned on in your car. You're just driving along thinking you're beating rushes at 11 a.m.
You're driving along. And all of a sudden the kids are yelling in the backseat. I gotta go to the bathroom, Daddy. Not now, damn it.
Sports Talk Saturday.
Huh. Not middle it gets. Okay.
I can't stop. Oh. Help. There's a cliff. And your family's screaming. Oh, my God, we're burning alive!
On WGR.
Welcome back to Hour 2 Sports Talk Saturday here. Nate Geary live at our Amherst studios. Got another 2 hours of local programming before college football gets going tonight. I'm excited. I hate both Florida and Miami, but I will watch it because it's college football. But let's go to the Western Hotline now because Mike Leone of the Daily Roto joining me now on the Western Hotline. Mike, it's great to have you on. I feel like this has been a long time coming, so thanks for joining me, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Excited to be on the show.
So, Mike, you wrote a piece earlier this week about Josh Allen. You kind of took a deep dive into the numbers, and here today you're going to discuss a little bit of that with me. But the first thing I kind of wanted to discuss, because I think for the most part, the average fan, when looking at their quarterback, only kind of look at the things that they can visually see, and they don't really ever fall back on statistics that may help or support or not support your thoughts about your quarterback. The one stat that you brought up right at the beginning of your piece was QBASE, which basically stands for Quarterbacks Adjusted Stats and Experience. And you mentioned in your piece that only 27 quarterbacks with a QBASE lower than zero have been drafted in the top 100, Allen being one of them. So if for my listeners that have no idea or have never heard of what QBASE is, what is it, and how are you applying it to Allen and trying to figure out whether or not he's a legitimate NFL quarterback or not?
So QBASE is a statistic developed by Football Outsiders. They do a lot of advanced statistics and scouting work, and what they've put together is an objective system to try to rank the collegiate quarterbacks as they come out and rank them as prospects. So it looks at a quarterback's yards per attempt in college, the strength of their competition, the strength of the team around them, their scheduling, and it tries to, you know, objectively account for as much context as possible, which is very difficult across all of the D1 teams. But they do a pretty good job, and I know when Allen was first drafted by the Bills, I was one of the very negative responders to that draft pick, and there was a sense from a lot of the people that were, I guess, the anti-Allen crowd that this was a doomed pick. They had no chance of working out. And when you look at QBASE, you try to separate the process of all the draft capital the Bills put into drafting Josh Allen with the prospect of him as a player. You know, the QBASE range of outcomes for him, and what they do is they are able to project a range of outcomes, you know, very broadly, what are the chances he's going to be a bust, an adequate starter, an upper-tier guy, or an elite guy? Those range of outcomes for him aren't the type of ranges that you would like to see for a guy taking seventh overall for a team that traded up twice for him in the first round, but they're not doom and gloom. You know, they have him with about a 40% chance of becoming an adequate starter and about a 15% chance of being upper-tier or elite, and I think those numbers are low for some of the reasons I talked about in my article, but even taking those numbers at face value, you know, there's a little bit more margin for error here than I think some of the anti-Allen crowd, myself included, felt like when he was initially drafted.
Mike, there seems to be this trend, and maybe it started last year, or maybe it just started last year for me because that was hitting close to home with Josh Allen. But, I mean, you look at this year, the polarization of the young quarterback position, and I look at it, and what I guess I mean by that is Daniel Jones has sort of been the Josh Allen of this draft cycle, the New York Giants quarterback. But, I mean, a really great preseason for Daniel Jones has maybe had some of those doubters kind of reel back some of the negative things they've said about Daniel Jones. When you look at the two quarterbacks, I think that there's no doubt both were overdrafted. But when you look at each of them, the system, the players around them, the head coach, the offensive coordinator, everything, when you take into account, when you look at those two, are they as similar as people are making them in terms of their draft position, or is that really where the similarities end between the two?
I think the similarities kind of end in the sense that, you know, you get a lot of, in all sports nowadays, sort of on one side you get the, you know, pure scouting guys, the guys that are just video, you know, go a little bit more off gut and feel, and then you get the pure numbers guys on the other side. And both Josh Allen and Daniel Jones were two guys where those two sides just butted heads so hard that it resulted in people taking pretty extreme stances on both sides, whether they're pro or anti-Allen or Daniel Jones. But I think that's where the conversation kind of ends. With Josh Allen, you know, everyone knows this. I don't need to tell you, but the question marks for him, the accuracy, you know, and is that going to improve? But he has an athletic profile that, you know, Daniel Jones can't compete with in terms of his size, his athleticism. Playerprofiler.com is a really nice website that can show you where guys have ranked in different combine metrics in terms of percentile. So his throw velocity, we know he has a strong arm, but he has a 100th percentile throw velocity, you know, literally the strongest arm that they've seen. His 40-yard dash, his burst score, his agility score, all like 75th to 80th percentile. So Josh Allen is a heck of an athlete, and that's something we saw this past season with his scrambling ability, which is something I hit on the article, that is really, I think, going to be integral to his game going forward.
Mike Leone here of Daily Roto on the Wester Hotline. And let's go into some of the positive you mentioned in that piece, especially going back to year one. And obviously you mentioned the running as one of those positives. And I think that's right. Like, I do think that his running, especially, and I always viewed this, Mike, like I view a young quarterback's ability to effectively run, or in Allen's, I mean, case, I mean, he was an elite level running quarterback last year, especially scrambling. And I think that's a good thing for a young quarterback to have, to bridge the gap early in his career between having to throw the ball on every time he drops back, but being able to sort of help his team win while still developing those passing traits. But do you think the frequency with which he ran kind of overshadowed some of the strides he actually took as a passer in the second half of that season? Because it seems like last year, everyone kind of talked about, and maybe this is outside of Buffalo, but everyone really kind of talked about his, what he was doing as a runner, and I do really think it ended up overshadowing the improvements he made as a passer in the second half of the season.
I'm a little torn on that. On one hand, I see what you're saying, because his yards per attempt definitely leaped up, you know, pre-injury versus post-injury. I think he went from around 6 yards per attempt to nearly 7 yards per attempt, which is a meaningful leap. And in terms of the scrambling, you know, not just what he was able to do in terms of rushing statistics, but if you look at the sack per game that he took, you know, he was taking about 4 sacks per game pre-injury and only about 1 sack post-injury. And that's a massive improvement. And I think, you know, Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator, really instilled in Allen to take off when he saw those lanes. And I think, so the rushing on one end, maybe it clouds, you know, what people saw in terms of his improvement passing, but I also think it works the other way, where because he was able to rush effectively and the Bills were able to have, you know, some modicum of success offensively, we still can't ignore the fact that over the past decade, in terms of adjusted yards per attempt, you know, Josh Allen had one of the worst 10 seasons out there. Of course, that's combining the first half of the season, the second half, and lumping it all together. It's a little oversimplified. But the rushing, depending on, again, the polarization, depending on what side you're on, can be used to overlook the improvements he made, but it can also be used to overlook the fact that he just really wasn't that good as a passer year one.
But when you look at that improvement, I guess, where, especially as a passer, in your opinion, you mentioned a couple stats. I think the stat, I mean, the sacks per game that he took, especially early in that season, to me is a product of processing speed. His ability to go through his reads, 1 through 3, 1 through 5, whatever they may be, and coming back from that injury, I guess my question really is going to stem to how valuable you think that time away from football in the 4 to 5 week span that he was out after the Texans game and came back after that Jets game, how valuable was that time, do you think, for a guy like Josh Allen, who, let's be honest, he was thrown into the second half of the first game. Everyone, including this Bills coaching staff, had all of the intentions in the world of letting Nathan Peterman play 16 football games. It just didn't work out that way. So, like, in your estimation, how valuable was that time away from the field and inside the classroom, especially with a guy like Derek Anderson?
I think it was really valuable for Allen, you know, not just for him to be able to sit back and be able to approach the situation a bit better instead of being thrust into, you know, as you mentioned, it was a difficult situation, and that schedule at the beginning of last year was pretty tough in terms of the defenses that they faced. It got a lot easier the second half. So I think that had something to do with it. But I was also, you know, I hate to take away too much credit for the player and give it to the coach, but offensive coordinator Brian Daboll, I feel like planning for Josh Allen's return, you know, as you said, they had all the intentions of using Nathan Peterman early. So when they threw Allen in there, I don't think they really had a plan around him to try and maximize his strengths and minimize his weaknesses for a pretty raw rookie quarterback. And I think when he returned from injury, that Daboll was able to do that, both in terms of identifying those opportunities for him to just take off and scramble, reduce the sacks, reduce sort of the quick processing in terms of having to make some of the quick passes. And they also, as you saw in his intended air yards per target, you know, he led the league at 11 intended air yards per target. So his pass attempts were deep down the field. And, that's what you want with Josh Allen. And that was really sort of the crux of my article, was how do the Bills survive in the modern age of NFL where passing is more efficient than rushing, but you have an inaccurate quarterback. And the answer is to pick up chunk plays, to pick up, you know, plays of long yardage. And that's what Brian Daboll, I think, sort of started to craft an offense around the second half of the season that has me excited, which is, let's take advantage of this guy's arm. Let's take advantage of his unique athleticism. You know, we're not going to complete 65% of passes like Tom Brady and Drew Brees, but maybe we complete 55 to 60, but we have a whole ton of chunk play. So that was really, I think, a big benefit for the team as a whole, not just for Allen mentally, but for the coaching staff as well, to craft for this high variance game plan around him that really made sense with his skill set.
Michael Leone here on the Wester Hotline. And Mike, one of the things that I appreciated about sort of the way that you approached this piece is talking about sort of how you fit a modern offense around a player like Josh Allen. And it's not that difficult, because here's the thing. This is a league that has really started trending more towards a pass-heavy, pass-dominant offensive league. And this is a team, and I think still an approach, if you're Sean McDermott, where I still think that they want to be at the top of the league in average, you know, attempts running the football a game. And I don't think that with a quarterback like Josh Allen that you can just be a team like the Kansas City Chiefs or the, you know, I mean, you name one of the Rams, where you're throwing the football 35 plus times a game. But I think what we saw early in this preseason, Mike, they seem to function at a higher level when they're spreading the field, when they're putting defenses in 5 and 6 defensive back positions, where Josh Allen can read the entire field. And I think maybe this is where I'm going to look for his biggest improvement in year two, is his ability to decipher what the defense is doing and put his offense into better situations. It just wasn't really doing that in year one. And I mean, how many rookie quarterbacks are, you know, changing plays at the line of scrimmage and going into a run or a pass play based on what the defense is doing? So from a processing standpoint and from what we know the league wants to be, which is a pass-heavy league, do you think that the steps forward he'll take in processing this year will lead to more attempts this season? Or do you believe that this is a team, this is an organization that's still kind of entrenched in an old school run first mindset?
So I really hope that they take a step forward. They trust Josh Allen a little bit more to throw the ball a bit more, because the bottom line is, if you have a bottom 10 pass rate adjusted for situation, you're just at a mathematical disadvantage from your opponents. You know, the analogy I made in the article was, teams that are shooting, you know, lots of two-pointers instead of three-pointers in the NBA, I mean, we just know at this point in time the expected value of a three-pointer is so much more than a two-pointer, that if you have a wide gap in terms of your three-point attempts, it's going to be very difficult to overcome that. And I think it's the same thing passing the football. If you're a run-heavy team, you are operating at a mathematical disadvantage. It's very difficult to overcome that. But as you said, Nate, it's not like you're going to throw Josh Allen out there to throw the ball 45 times a game. You know, they're not the Chiefs. They're not the Rams. So how do you make it work? And as you said, I think the spread offense really is going to be key for them. And they made tons of improvements around him, you know, not just Josh Allen's hopeful improvement, but big upgrades on the offensive line. You bring in John Brown, another deep threat that fits in with picking up chunk plays and Josh Allen's big arm. You bring in Cole Beasley, which hopefully helps you, you know, get that completion percentage to a more acceptable range, give him some easy plays. And I think you start to see the wheels turning where the Bills will be at least willing a little bit to sort of, you know, hashtag pass to win. I know at yards per pass, like to say. And I think they need to start moving that way, maybe not all at once, but at least gradually.
So, Mike, before I let you go, I do want to get some of your thoughts because I think this what we're just talking about here is this pass to win, right? And I look at some of the narrative around a quarterback like Josh Allen, who I think this team is embracing, this organization is a little bit embracing that mentality. I think that they realize that to be a team that's going to consistently win, they do need to be in the top half of the league in passing yards. I just think that it's a reality that every team has to come to at some point in modern day NFL play. I don't think that the Baltimore Ravens are getting to that point. In fact, I think that they're sort of zigging while everyone else is zagging, much like the Bills were doing when Tyrod Taylor was here. And that's obviously in an offense with Greg Roman and Lamar Jackson that is going to be somewhat gimmicky. There's going to be a lot of option. There's going to be a lot of, you know, I would say gimmick looks. So with that being said, I don't see Lamar Jackson being anywhere above 21st or 20 or 20th in passing attempts. I just don't think that's going to be their recipe for winning football games. So why is it then that the narrative around Lamar Jackson, is it just because that he's in a system that everyone knows rather than Josh Allen is still kind of wondering what the system is that he can play well in, where I think at least right now, Lamar Jackson has a history of at least being able to execute a style of offense like this because he did it in college. So, like, I guess my question at the crux of this is, Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen?
Oh, man, I mean, that's difficult. I think you got to take Josh Allen because of the ceiling with his arm and, as we've mentioned, with passing to win. Like, you're not going to get that out of Lamar Jackson. I will say I am really interested to see. That's one of the most interesting things about this entire NFL season for me is the offense crafted around Lamar Jackson. You know, they got Greg Roman there who had the Bills and Tyrod Taylor, you know, top 10 in offensive DVOA for his full season here. And the Ravens are actually one of the more analytics-friendly organizations out there. So it's not like they don't understand passing efficiency trumps rushing efficiency, yet they're still doing this. So that dichotomy really intrigues me to see what they're able to do this season. But if you're, you know, making me pick between the two, I think you want this ceiling that Josh Allen provides just because you can't. I don't think you can pick up those chunk plays. It's particularly in the 15 to 25 yard range is where Josh Allen needs to live. He got the arm to complete a lot of those passes in that range, and those passes are worth so much more than shorter passes. Lamar Jackson doesn't have the same skill set to capitalize on that.
So before I let you go, Mike, is there a rookie or second-year quarterback, and I think maybe the obvious answer to this one is like probably like Baker Mayfield or Sam Darnold, but is there a rookie or second-year quarterback that you're really looking to this year to take a significant, and maybe Baker isn't the right guy for this because I think he's already playing at a really high level, and what a significant jump for Baker Mayfield would be like he's on the level of Patrick Mahomes, right? So that big step this year, who are you looking to out of the first and second year guys to take that real big step?
I mean, this is sort of a cop-out because he was the number one overall pick, but I think Kyler Murray is going to impress people and have more immediate success than most people think. You know, like Baker Mayfield, just absolutely crushed in terms of yards per attempt at the college level. And we talk about spread offense, taking advantage of Josh Allen's legs. That's what Kyler Murray is going to have at his, you know, disposal in Arizona with Cliff Kingsbury as coach. He's going to run a spread offense, and they're going to give him lots of opportunities to succeed.
All right, Mike. I appreciate it, brother. Thanks for hopping on. Great piece. Love your work, and I look forward to having you on as the season unfolds here.
Appreciate it, mate. Take care.
Yep, Mike Leone there of Daily Roto. When we come back, I've got Stephen Ruiz of For the Win USA Today. That's up next here on Sports Talk Saturday on WGR.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday, my loaded hour two, set to continue here in just a few moments. Stephen Ruiz of For the Win will join us here to talk a little around the NFL action as we continue on the afternoon. I've got Coach Lance Leipold joining me at 12:45 to help preview the UB football season, which starts next Thursday. College football starts this evening, which means Pete Kargis, former WGR employee, will be joining me to discuss his yearly college football primer. So we will have Pete on at 1 o'clock to discuss that. So a loaded show here for the next hour or so, and we'll continue talking some NFL as well this hour. Let's go to the phones real quick as Sean in Long Island. He's been waiting patiently. Sean, you're on Sports Talk Saturday. Welcome.
Hey, how's it going?
Very good.
Good. Just wanted to, it sounds a little crazy, but everybody gets so panicky after one kind of haphazard start last night by Josh. But it's a stupid question because it's not really even going to happen. But between Barkley's performance against the Jets last year and how he's done in the preseason, which has been really very good, mm-hmm. do you in your core feel more comfortable with him taking the reins at the start of the season if we're to win now this season because of Josh being such a wild card? Do you think the team is better set with him if he was to start the season?
I would tell you if this team still had Doug Marrone and this team still felt internally the pressure to win right now. It's not that the Bills don't and Sean McDermott doesn't feel pressure right now to be a 10-11 win football team. But what I'll say is maybe in an instance where there was more internal pressure, whether it's through ownership or through, you know, general manager or just lack of winning or lack of structure or belief in this organization, then maybe Barkley is the guy that gives this team the best opportunity right now to win football games. But I think that they are all in on Josh Allen in his improvement and his development. And the only way he's going to develop is continue playing. They got the weapons to surround Josh Allen. They kept Brian Daboll around because it's an offense that they like Josh Allen playing. Let's go to the West Hur Hotline. Thanks for the call, Sean, where Stephen Ruiz joins me now for the win on USA Today. Stephen, thanks, man, for joining me and joining the program today. I appreciate it. How are you?
I'm good. Was that Matt Barkley calling in before me?
That might have been Matt Barkley. No, it wasn't Matt Barkley. But no, it's been an interesting preseason, Stephen, here in Buffalo, because the team has looked fairly good, right? I mean, the offense has looked like it's taken steps forward. Of course, it is the preseason in Buffalo. We have what we call the preseason pledge, where we try not to take anything away from preseason football. But Matt Barkley, I mean, and this isn't just here in Buffalo, Matt Barkley has been getting some talk from around the league from national reporters as he's having the best preseason of any quarterback right now. He's looked really, really good. Of course, he's doing it against second teamers. So what exactly can you take away from it, you know?
Yeah, I haven't really watched him this preseason, or I can't remember the last time I watched Matt Barkley. I'm just going off like 2 years ago, and I can't imagine him starting
no.
the whole team.
No. And listen, I mean, you know, I'm a Notre Dame fan. I was never a very big Matt Barkley fan because he was a USC guy. And if you're a Notre Dame guy, USC is just everyone is trash and you never really give them the respect that they deserve. But I'll say this with Matt Barkley is, you know, he was out of football, 14, 15 months ago. And he came into that situation last year against the Jets. And man, for a guy that hadn't been played football in a calendar year, had 12 days to learn an entire playbook, he came in and against a good Jets defense and just totally dismantled him. So, for what we say about Matt Barkley's past and whatever he's going to be in the future, you definitely can't take away the performance he put up against the Jets last year and very limited preparation time.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's why these teams keep signing guys like Matt Barkley, because they can just step in and they they've seen different offenses. They've seen studied different offensive playbooks. I think they can just play in a pinch, and we saw that with Barkley.
So, Steve, before I kind of get into the league, I did want to start with some of your thoughts about the Bills out, you know, not Matt Barkley related, which is a weird way to start this interview, but hey, it's Buffalo. So, but in terms of this Bills team heading into the regular season, I think we can kind of go through the storylines, right? Like, they added a ton to the offensive line. They added one of the better centers when healthy in football. They added a really nice piece in Cole Beasley that I think a lot of people really like around the league. I know he was wanted by the Patriots. They added John Brown, who they wanted to get last year, but he ends up signing a one-year deal to make some more money this year. He ends up cashing out with the Bills. They go out and they have a nice draft. They get Cody Ford and Ed Oliver. Like, what are your views of this Bills team? Are they, I guess the real question is, where do they fall? Are they second or third best team in the AFC East?
I would say second. I know it's between them and the Jets. The Patriots are on top. The Dolphins are on the bottom. I would lean towards Buffalo. I think they have a better roster top to bottom. And I trust their defense a lot more, and I trust Sean McDermott a lot more than Adam Gase. I really like their roster. I like where they're going. I think they're, like, talent-wise, I think they're an 8-win team, but that doesn't mean they can't win 10 games. If they get lucky in some one-possession games and they get some turnover luck, then I think they could, like, make a run at the wild card spot.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of an interesting thought over here right now, because you look at the team and you look at the roster, and I think a lot of fans for the first time are seeing players that they either A, like, or B, think are actually good football players that can help this football team win. And some of these guys are on the outside looking in. And I think for the first time, the Bills have a level of depth that not many Bills fans are familiar with a team having. And in my opinion, Steven, it's because they're going into the third year of a head coach and they're not starting over with a new scheme, a new organizational structure, a new general manager. Just everything that this team hasn't been for the better part of two decades, they're now sort of implementing the continuity that they've been talking about finding for years. And they found, looks like they've at least found that with Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott. But from a depth perspective, and I'm kind of glad that you brought that up, like, where do you put this team? Because they're definitely not from a top down, you know, at the top of their roster, they're not really in the mix of being one of the better teams in football. There are teams that have a lot better top heavy rosters than the Bills, but the bottom side of the roster, I think, is one that you look at from a depth structure that you say, man, it's hard to find a lot of teams with more depth than the Bills.
Right. They don't really have any, like, blue chip players, you would say, maybe one or two, but you look at the roster, you go down the list, and you're like, oh, he's solid, he's solid, he's solid, he's solid. And it just keeps going and going. I think Brandon Bean has done a great job of just filling the back end of the roster, and that's like something the Patriots always have done the last two decades. They've always made sure that they're not top-heavy. And I think that's the best model to go with, because this is football. People are going to get hurt the long season, and you need depth anyway.
You definitely need depth, and the Bills have proven that quite a few times. But one of the things that I think maybe I'm most looking forward to, Steve, and I'd love your thought on this, is obviously the development of Josh Allen in year two and what this offense looks like with a confident and functioning Josh Allen from a passing perspective. I asked this to my last guest, Mike Leone of Daily Roto, and I wanted to ask you the same thing. His running year one, and really I'm talking about the running and the effectiveness that he had in the second half of the season after he came back from injury. There was a significant, I thought, improvement from Josh Allen as a passer. But I also think that from around the league, it sort of got overshadowed by how much he was running the football and running it effectively. And I almost think that people started looking at the running as a negative because it was taking away from his ability to improve as a passer. Like, where do you fall on the Josh Allen conundrum of wanting him to run and be an effective runner, but also he still needs to develop as a passer?
I'm one of those people that doesn't think that running the ball, like, for a quarterback will affect their development at all. I know that was the talk around Cam Newton. I'm a Panthers fan. That was the talk around Cam Newton early in his career. I think you just got to lean into it. I mean, that's part of what makes him such a interesting prospect, is that he can run the ball. He has this big time arm. I think you just lean into it and you build it into the offense. And I think Brian Daboll has done that. I think he did a great job of adjusting the offense as the season went on. And that's why I think Josh Allen looked more comfortable in the second half as a passer. I do agree with that assessment.
Stephen Ruiz here on the Western Hotline. He's from For the Win, a USA Today publication. Steve, one of the things, too, that I want to kind of look around the league, one of the things that I think is starting to stand out is the Cleveland Browns is maybe being the roster we were just talking about, right? Like a really, really top-heavy roster. Some real power players, blue-chip athletes at the top of that roster, and a second-year quarterback looking to, in my opinion, be sort of in the MVP conversation. But it looks like there's always, of these good teams, there's always going to be cracks in the foundation. Can they overcome those cracks in the foundation to be an elite-level football team? The Browns are going to have to get over what I believe is really shaky offensive line play. I think it showed up yesterday against what I estimate to be a not that good, I mean, very middle of the line, below average Buccaneers defensive line. Like, what are your thoughts about that Browns offensive line, and is that something that could potentially be these teams' Achilles heel?
I think you're being generous to the Bucs. I mean, below average is a compliment. They're one of the, they might be the worst pass rush in the league. And yeah, like you said, they were getting to Baker Mayfield. I think that's definitely going to be a problem. I think that's one of the most important facets of offensive play is the offensive line. If Baker Mayfield not protected, I think he's going to struggle more than he did in the second half of last year after he got with Freddie Kitchens. People are just assuming that he's going to improve, but I think he'll improve as a player, but if his offensive line is worse off, because it was really good at the end of last year, and I think he could be really bad this year, I think he's going to look like a different player. He's not going to produce. He's not going to be as efficient. He might be a better player individually, but I don't think he's going to produce the same statistics, even though he has Odell Beckham. But you need to be upright in order to get the ball to him.
Yeah, and the defensive side of the ball for the Browns, it's hard for me to find a real crack in that foundation other than the linebacker position. But I think that they can they have enough good pieces up front that they can probably, I don't know, overshadow some of the shortcomings that linebacking group has. Defensively, what are your expectations for the Browns this year under Freddie Kitchens?
My big worry is defensive coordinator Steve Wilks. I wasn't a big fan of him when he was with the Panthers. I thought he replaced Sean McDermott, who's obviously with the Bills now. I don't think he was as good as Sean McDermott, and that defense started to fall off, and it really fell off last year. And then you saw him go to Arizona, and he didn't adjust his scheme to his personnel, and that's something that Sean McDermott always did. Steve Wilks didn't do that in Arizona. He had Patrick Peterson, the best man corner in the league, maybe, playing cover three every snap. So I'm worried about that because the Browns' defense was built to play man coverage. If he's going to be playing all this zone and these static coverages, I'm worried that offenses aren't going to have a hard time figuring out their defense and exploiting it.
The other team that I'm really interested in, Steven, is the New York Giants, and not because I think that they're going to be some good football team. I just think that it's fun to watch a tire fire or a garbage can with gasoline burning in the night sky. And one of the things that I'm very interested about is the New York Giants fan base and New York Giants media is not taking the preseason pledge. In fact, they've now gone basically all in on Daniel Jones being a starting quarterback because he's looked good against second stringers in the preseason. What's your take on the Daniel Jones situation in New York, and is there really a thought that he might be playing over Eli Manning at some point earlier in the season than I think a lot of people predict?
I think on another team, Daniel Jones would be starting week one, but I don't know what Eli has on the owner there. They just seem unwilling to move on from him. And, yeah, I was actually a fan of Daniel Jones before the draft, but even I'm like, this is ridiculous. We're overreacting to his preseason performance. I mean, he's made some good throws, but the question with him coming out was his velocity, his throwing velocity, and whether he can make those tight window throws and fired into downfield. And I haven't seen him do that yet. All of his big-time throws so far have kind of been lofted. I want to see him show off that arm strength a little more because that was my biggest question with him. I mean, he's looked good. It's encouraging. You're not going to be like, oh, this is bad. But I think Giants fans are jumping the gun. They really, like, did a 360 here. And, yeah, I would temper their expectations. I don't think he's going to play. I think Eli is probably going to start into at least October. If he's struggling like he did last year early, I think they'll replace him. But if he's playing, like, mediocre, which he has the last, like, 3 years, I think they'll keep him in the lineup. I think the Giants are maybe better than the public has given them credit for. I could see them being like a 7-8 win team. And if they are that, they're going to be in the playoff race until November even if it's unrealistic. And if that's the case, they're going to keep Eli in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, Eli Manning must have some compromising photos of John Mara and the Mara family or something, because it just seems weird that they're so hitched to Eli Manning at this point in his career. And I think that that photo the other night where the entire media scrum is surrounding Daniel Jones while Eli Manning ties his shoes is sort of the direction that fan base and franchise seems to be going. But I guess my question is, if you're going to start Daniel Jones, who's he going to like throw to? Like they don't have weapons on that offense. I feel like what they're asking Eli Manning to do is they're going to ask him to sacrifice himself for the betterment of the team to get to year two for Daniel Jones. But like, if your defense is all you have to do is put eight in the box, because who is going to beat them on the outside?
Right. No one on that team scares you. They have like three slot players and then a bunch of dudes named Shepard. There's no one there that's going to be able to beat you on the outside and beat you downfield. So you can play like man coverage on the outside. And then, yeah, focus all your resources on stopping Saquon Barkley, who's the only thing they have on that offense right now.
All right, Steven. Hey, man, I appreciate you hopping on with me kind of last minute. Let's do this again for sure. I appreciate your time today. And you could give yourself a promo. Tell the people where they can find you on Twitter.
You can find me on Twitter at TheStevenRuiz. And, yeah, I come on anytime.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we'll be in contact soon, my friend.
All right, thanks.
Yep, Steven Ruiz there of For the Win on the Western Hotline. When we come back, UB head coach Lance Leipold, he's going to join the program here live on the Western Hotline. That's up next here on Sports Talk Saturday on WGR. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. Nate Geary here. Let's go right to the West Her Hotline, where UB football coach Lance Leipold joins the program. Coach, thanks so much for carving out a little bit of time for me this afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Big news this week, you know. I mean, football season, first of all, is here, so congratulations. I know this is what you live for, so it's here. But a big week for the program, naming Matt Myers the starting quarterback this week. And I guess my question for you, Coach, is what did you see from your young quarterback throughout the spring and summer that gives you the confidence that he's the man to lead this football team forward?
Well, I think he has all the intangibles that you're looking for in a quarterback in today's college football world, a quarterback who has a strong arm, quick release, the physicality to be to carry the ball when asked to in run pass option type scenarios. And, you know, we just feel, you know, really it wasn't even as much, last August we could see that Matt had a bright future. He was a little bit slowed by a hamstring injury in the spring that probably, obviously slowed it down for him and also made us kind of go a little bit into the fall camp to get the full evaluation. But I thought Kyle Van Treese had a good camp as well as Dominic Johnson. But, looking at the big picture for the immediate future and long term, we felt Matt was the man to go with.
Coach, you know, I don't think fans or even sometimes media like myself really fully appreciate the levity of the decision of the starting quarterback. When you have a three-way battle, I mean, you have three young guys that you either recruited or were a part of recruiting and bringing to your program, and eventually you have to pick one, and that's the hard part of the job. It's probably one of the hardest parts of the job. How do you sort of put aside some of the emotional attachments so that you make the right decision for your football team, not just for now, but for the future of the program as well?
Well, I think as you follow, especially college football today, the impact on quarterbacks and winning and losing jobs and whether or not they stay in your program and so forth is becoming a hotter topic than ever. So that is one of the things that is very delicate, because each and every player in our program, but again, the profile position of quarterback, you have to be there. And we always have tried to, tell all our players they're going to get a full chance to compete in our program. We think our practice model gives us that opportunity to fully evaluate. But, a lot of the evaluation starts with the position coach. Jim Zabrowski did an excellent job of setting up the reps and monitoring and charting and the whole thing of the situation. You know, Jim and myself played quarterback in college, mm-hmm. and we've been on the other end of that conversation when you don't win a job and you've got to wait a little bit longer, or you have to go back to work and figure some things to keep going. So I think both of us were very sensitive to the situation, to the quarterbacks that did not win the position, and that doesn't mean that they're not productive and can't help us win. So you got to try to keep all those things in mind and be talented along the way.
Going back to your young quarterback coach in Matt Myers, yes, he's young, but one of the advantages of being with the program for a full year already is that he does have a better grasp of the playbook than a guy who's a true freshman coming in off the streets or coming in from high school. So do you guys have the confidence in Myers saying that he's already had that year in the program where you think the entire playbook is sort of at your disposal, or do you think that you guys kind of want to ease him into things being a first-year starter?
Well, I think Matt has a great grasp of the playbook. You know, as you mentioned, being in the program for a year, there's some other things that kind of help with that development. I think one of them is that we made sure that Matt traveled to all the games last year. So he's been through kind of the routine on the road and being in the hotel and what the meetings are like and what the preparation's like, what the weekly thing of the weekly routine that the quarterbacks go through. So he had a good grasp of that. The extra practice to play in the conference championship game, the extra practices for bowl preparation. So he's been, and as you go into those games, you keep adding maybe new wrinkles. So we think he has. I think if there's one thing that may hold us back a little bit, it probably won't be Matt. It'll probably be the new receiving core mm-hmm. that we have, and we have to make sure that we don't overload them too much.
Well, I think that's a really good point, Coach, and one of the positions I wanted to talk to you was receiver, but I think even before we get into the receiver, being a former quarterback myself, like you realize how important the guys up front are for a young quarterback in his development. Your offensive line last year, I mean, Tyree Jackson, pretty much other than some of the running plays that he had, he could have left a lot of games with a very clean jersey because that offensive line did such a good job keeping him upright, allowing him to process through all of his reads. I guess this is kind of a two-part question, Coach, because if the offensive line can maintain that dominance this year for a young quarterback, how does that help up front, ultimately help the development of your receivers if your quarterback has the time in the pocket to find and scan the field and find the open receiver?
Well, I think it does. It gives them the great confidence to make sure they get to the correct depth. They run their routes, pattern read the coverage appropriately, all those different things. So as we always know, to have success, you got to be good up front. And have that type of experience coming back is going to be vital for this whole team. But obviously the quarterbacks and receivers are going to benefit the most. The other part of it as well is that, we have to be able to establish a running game. And with the running game, it's going to help the receivers, but those receivers got to do a great job on the perimeter blocking. But you hope as this all ties together, then if we establish a good running game, play action pass becomes a better part of our offense, and those will help everyone, especially Matt.
Apologize to the defense for me focusing so much on the offense, Coach, but there's a lot of great storylines on the offensive side of the ball, including your two sophomore running backs, Kevin Marks and Jarrett Patterson. I guess my question for you, Coach, is there enough to go around for two players that I think really established themselves as not only good college football players, but I think elite-level running backs, especially in the MAC? I think if one guy went down, you can make the argument that if the other guy had a premier number one running back position and carry totals, that they could be a MAC Player of the Year candidate.
Oh, I would like to think so, too, but again, in today's football, and you look at the physicality of the game and everything, I think both of those players, besides being very productive and talented, they both have embraced the opportunity to share the position with the other, and that, two heads are better than one. You're going to have a chance to stay fresh. We can have a chance to, when we need to run the ball, be fresh and effective in the second half. And, besides those two, we feel very, very good and confident in another young man, in Dylan McDuffie, mm-hmm. right here in Buffalo. And yep. I think Dylan's continued to show that he's a very versatile player and a physical runner and gives us another size component in the backfield. And he's gonna get his touches as well.
UB head coach Lance Leipold here on the Wester Hotline. Coach, before I let you go for the afternoon, Rhode Island this coming Thursday, and then you're off to Beaver Stadium to play Penn State in week 2. Now, I feel like this is just a very common football question that head coaches get asked. How do you, are you up at night thinking about preparing your team for a good Rhode Island team coming home in front of your home stadium in week one? While I just think human nature is going to have your guys thinking about that Beaver Stadium game in week two. How do you guard your team from not overlooking their week one opponent as to, we'll get to Penn State, but we've got business to take care of week one first?
Well, we do, and I just want to make sure our listeners know it's Robert Morris.
Robert Morris, I'm sorry, Rhode Island. Robert Morris, yes, Robert Morris.
That's okay. You know, one of those things that you have to, I think, you know, we look back to the 2016 season. We lost to Albany in the opener, and, you know, we had a, you know, it was a team where we were in a lot of transition at that time. So I think we have some veterans on our team that remember that and staying focused. I think it's been an approach of ours from the start, is that we know. Yeah, I think that's a game, the second game of the year, as well as some of the other challenging games we'll have during it. But we've always talked about, you got to be where your feet are at. And one way thing is that we have to establish ourselves and get ourselves off to a good start, find a way to get the first victory of the year, and then we'll prepare as we move forward.
All right, Coach. Hey, I appreciate you carving out some time for me this afternoon. The big game on Thursday, if you're a UB football fan, Thursday night, Robert Morris at UB Stadium. Be there. Coach, thanks so much for joining me, and good luck this football season.
Well, appreciate it, Nate. Anytime that we can work it out, love to do it.
So awesome.
You have a great weekend.
Thanks, Coach. You too. Coach Lance Leipold there on the Western Hotline. When we come back, more college football coming your way. Pete Carr just joins me for the College Football Primer here on Sports Talk Saturday on WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.